SpaceX Falcon 9 successfully launching its first top-secret spy satellite Monday, marking a coup for SpaceX CEO and founder Elon Musk, who fought for years to break the 10-year monopoly on Lockheed Martin and Boeing's rocket launch contracts. With the classified nature of the cargo for the U.S. National Reconnaissance Office, not much is known about the satellite's final destination or objective.
I would say product and marketing has been the consistent trend on the four quarters of acceleration. We'll continue to analyze the data. Twitter benefits when influential people in the world use our platform to tell what's happening. We encourage that. We love the discussion. We love the conversation that's happening. And so the more it happens, the better we are going to be at showing you what's happening in the world and what's being talked about. So we'd love it if every world leader used Twitter as their primary mechanism to talk to their constituencies.
U.S. lawmakers on Monday optimistic after reaching a deal to keep the government funded while boosting defense spending. Democrats, who command a minority in both houses of Congress, seem to have fended off several key White House initiatives. The deal contains no money for a border wall with Mexico, which U.S. President Donald Trump repeatedly promised to build. Instead, it allocates $1.5 billion to repair and upgrade border security infrastructure.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's May 2nd, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you along with us on another business day, another episode of our show. We have lots to talk about. Drowsy, drunk, drug, distracted drivers, they're out there. A lot of us play really offense instead of defense when we're driving, and it's really causing problems in terms of stats on the highways. We're going to be talking to a safety expert a little bit later in the show about what we can do to be safer on the road and end distracted driving, perhaps once and for all. There are some solutions. We'll talk with an expert again in the latter half of the show. In a minute, we'll look at sort of the data from the first 100 days of President Trump's White House term. From an economic standpoint, there's been a lot of snapshots of that. We'll take a data dive with Glassdoor in just a few seconds. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are negative. So are S&P futures. NASDAQ futures are pointing up as we head toward the opening on Wall Street later this morning. Crude oil is trading at $49.04 a barrel, up about a half a percent. Around the globe this morning, markets in Europe are generally higher. The FTSE up about a half a percent. The DAX is up just about a quarter this morning. In Asia, markets are generally higher as well, with the Nikkei leading the way in Japan up about 135 points. That's going to end probably up about three quarters of a percent this morning. Most of the other indices, as I mentioned, higher open possibly on Wall Street later this morning, but right now it appears to be flat to negative. A couple of stories that we're watching since you went to bed last night. Of course, the Writers Guild of America, we all watch television and movies. It appears that there is a tentative deal that was reached early today covering television and film workers. They ratified, it has to be ratified now by its members. It'll be a three-year deal. The announcement came more than 90 minutes after the previous contract expired. Pickets could have started early this morning. Immediate sending late-night talk shows into reruns. It would also impact the script series that are in development, in production now, again, for the summer and fall seasons. The previous writer strike occurred nearly 10 years ago and gradually took a wider toll on Hollywood TV and movie production and the overall economy. A Japan central bank chief says Asia needs all the help it can get in fighting poverty as both wealth and poor nations grapple with widening inequality. The Bank of Japan says it welcomes China's push to support regional growth through Chinese-led Asian infrastructure investment. The leader there also said that the United States should be more involved with organizing trade agreements like the TPP that was canceled. They're happy to see the North American Free Trade Agreement is going to stand in place, though, as it is. And 100 days already over for the Trump administration. The group Glassdoor has put together a real data dive on this, and we're happy to have with us one of the chief economists there and analysts, Andrew Chamberlain of Glassdoor. This is a data dive, and it sort of looks at the economy, not something that has been microscoped in the last couple of days. More of it has been about policy and bills passed. Andrew is with us this morning from New York. Andrew, good morning. Thanks for being with us. Let's talk first about what you measured and why.
Most measures of a president's first 100 days look at things like bills passed or executive orders signed. We looked at something different. We looked at jobs in the economy. So we took 9 measures of the labor market and the economy and measured them in 2 different ways. We got 18 total measures of what's going on, and these include everything from total job creation to how many job postings we have on Glassdoor to consumer confidence in the stock market. And we looked at how things are going today compared to the same period about a year ago.
It's probably worth noting, too, before we get into some nitty-gritty, it's kind of hard to give the president credit for these kinds of things, isn't it?
Well, it is. You have to be careful to remember that presidents really control very few things in the economy. Arguably, there are many other factors that are much more important, like the Federal Reserve or large employers or banks or even state and local governments and the courts. But on the other hand, whatever happens under the president's watch for jobs in the economy, he will ultimately be credited or blamed. So it's worthwhile taking a look at how things are trending today and whether anything's really changed from a year ago.
Well, let's take a dive into that. Let's start with the economy overall. What did you find?
Well, for the most part, we have what I think is the strongest labor market in a generation. And that was mostly inherited by the Trump administration from the latter part of the Obama presidency. So during these first 100 days, it's mostly been a continuation of the very positive trends that we saw before. Wage growth has been slowly rising. Job creation has maintained roughly the same rate and is down slightly. While most things are just a continuation of what we saw before, there are a few measures where it looks like the psychology of the Trump administration and their promises are bumping up the measures.
Hang on with us, Andrew. We'll be back with more with Andrew Chamberlain of Glassdoor. We're talking with him about the first 100 days in office for Donald Trump, the president, from an economic standpoint, its measures on the economy.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, tech stocks rose on Monday, driving the NASDAQ higher by 44 points. The S&P 500 picked up 4 points, but the Dow Jones Industrial Average sank 27 to settle at 20,913. Overnight contract talks between Hollywood TV and movie producers and the Writers Guild of America have yielded a tentative agreement. The deal, which still needs rank-and-file approval, covers WGA members for 3 years and heads off reruns for late-night talk shows. President Trump says he's open to raising the federal gas tax for the first time since 1993. The hike would help to pay for the president's ambitious infrastructure plan, improvements to the nation's roads, bridges, airports, and seaports. Celebrating Cinco de Mayo this weekend, expect to pay more, a lot more, for that bowl of guacamole. Prices for Mexican-grown avocados have more than doubled from this time last year because of a worldwide surge in demand. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Glassdoor. The chief economist there is Andrew Chamberlain. We're doing an analysis of President Trump's first 100 days as it impacts the economy. One of the measures, Andrew, that you looked at in all of this was manufacturing. It's one of the areas that seems to be creating a lot of jobs, does it not?
Manufacturing job openings is one area where it reflects hiring intent by employers, and they can change that overnight. And it's forward-looking. It's the plans by employers to add jobs. And that's been a special focus during the Trump administration. And it's pretty clear in the data when you look at manufacturing job listings on Glassdoor, whether or not the president is entirely responsible for that, they are up pretty significantly from a year ago. So that's a positive trend that I think the president has played some role in. The other two measures that are up that are plausibly related to the Trump's first 100 days are the stock markets, which are up somewhere on the order of 20% from a year ago, and also consumer confidence, just people's beliefs about the future and how well things will be going. Consumer confidence is very divided along partisan lines, with Republicans think that we're entering a boom period, and Democrats think that we are entering almost like a deep recession. But on average, consumer confidence is still up in the country, and that's been way up since the election.
And those things are kind of fickle, too. And you mentioned earlier that they could turn around very quickly. What would it take to turn that in the other direction? What would we have to see to make it go the other way?
The economy since World War II has gone into a recession on average about every 58 months. And today, we are close to 8 years for this economic expansion. So it's inevitable, you know, during a working lifetime, we're all going to experience many recessions, and we're overdue for one. And it doesn't necessarily mean we have to have a recession during Trump's first term, but it's hard to believe that we'll maintain where we are today with a 4.5% unemployment rate and near record numbers of job openings. Eventually, things will slow, and it's very hard to predict when that will happen, but that's what it would take to turn some of these around.
There's all kinds of debates about, is the president, is the Trump administration focusing on the right things? Is there anything from what you've surveyed here to determine if that's the case or not? Is he doing the right things with taxes? Is he doing the right thing with all of these executive orders?
Well, the country is very politically divided, and so the answer to that really depends on who you ask. If you look at the markets, especially the stock market, Wall Street seems to believe that the promises of tax cuts and tax reform and the promises of regulatory rollbacks and thinning out regulations, they believe that those are pro-growth measures, and that's being reflected in stock prices. So if by that measure, yes. On the other hand, there are other policies that many business leaders are concerned about, such as cutting off the flow of skilled H-1B workers, for example. The tech industry is obviously very concerned about that. And also agriculture is concerned about a border wall and how that might affect their ability to get the labor they need in order to keep U.S. produce prices low.
A couple of things there. Let's talk first about agriculture. We kind of see the inklings of perhaps a trade war with Canada, perhaps with China. Are those things real possibilities?
Well, the trade dispute with Canada is probably something that would have happened even if Hillary Clinton was our president. That's something that's been brewing for many years. In terms of the trade disputes with other countries, it's hard to separate the talk from the reality. Certainly, trade unquestionably, economists believe, helps the country on balance. Even if certain people are harmed by it, overall the country benefits. And so it's something that wise policy will continue to expand. So trade wars, economists teach, are a little like shooting yourself in the foot, cutting off your nose to spite your face, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so it's most economists do not believe we will enter a period of protectionism like we saw, say, during the 1930s.
One of the things that the President Trump has promised is he's going to create millions and millions of jobs. We saw with the last Beige book that a number of the Fed districts across the country are at near full employment. What has to happen to create all of those new jobs that he's promised? Where will those workers come from? Where will those jobs come from?
When you have a 4.5% unemployment for the country, which is very, very low, and unemployment near 3% in many cities, it's not realistic to expect booming job growth because there just aren't enough people to go into those seats. There aren't enough bodies to fill jobs. So what would have to happen to have big job growth would have to be a big increase in the labor force participation rate or a big increase in immigration. You have to have more people going into the labor market to make that a reality. I don't think either one of those things are very likely. We're very late in the economic cycle. As I said, we're almost 8 years into this economic expansion. It's normal during these times to have job growth slow down a bit because we're close to full employment. And the economy just doesn't need to create 200,000 or 300,000 jobs per month to keep everyone working. The reality is we only need about 100,000 jobs in order to stay where we are. So I think much of that is talk, but might not translate into reality.
Yeah. One of the other parts of it is you touched on was the wage part of this not going up as fast as some economists would like. What would it take to get that area moving in the right direction?
Well, the secret to wage growth is productivity growth, making workers more productive per hour, and having tight labor markets. And so we're seeing very low unemployment in many cities, and we finally are starting to see wages rise. So, for example, in Glassdoor's local pay reports, Chicago median pay was up 3.8% from 1 year ago. That's well above the national average. And it's partly because of fast-growing pay for software engineers and for many healthcare professions like registered nurse, and also for things like warehouse associates. These are the people on the ground fueling the growth of Amazon's retail empire. So I think that when you start to see labor demand strengthening for jobs. You do see workers bargaining and getting better pay. And so it's we're finally starting to see pay return to normal times.
So with all of these different measures of the 100 days, if you had to give a report card grade, what would it be?
Well, we looked at 18 total measures, and 14 of those were positive or better than a year ago. So that's 78% better. The other four were either the same or worse. So a 78% grade, it's not an A, it's not an F. According to most teachers, that'd be something like a C plus or a B minus. So it's a mixed picture. The best we can hope for is for today's strong labor market, though, to continue throughout the next 4 years.
Do you think this 100-day measure is a fair one? You know, even the president has said it's sort of a weird, why do you measure 100 days? Is there a better measure in terms of time?
Well, the best measure will be at the end of the term looking backward, but that doesn't help us today. The 100-day measure isn't perfect, but it is something all presidents are held to. And it is interesting because it shows us what's going on during the time when the president's at the height of their popularity and has the most momentum. And the president himself, during the campaign, had a very detailed plan for policy actions during the first 100 days. So I think that this is a fair comparison to say, is it for supporters, are things as good as we think? For opponents of the president, are things as bad as we think? What this 100-day measure that we did does is it shows people the data to give them a reality check. Things probably aren't as bad as many Democrats believe, and at the same time, we're probably not doing as well as many Republicans believe. The truth is somewhere in between.
All right, Andrew, we'll check back with you perhaps again in 100 days or maybe even at the end of the term and see how we're doing.
Great. We would love to do so. Thank you.
Dr. Andrew Chamberlain is the chief economist at Glassdoor. He oversees research there. You can find more at glassdoor.com, on Twitter at Glassdoor. Dr. Andrew Chamberlain with us this morning on Trump's first 100 days and his impact on the economy.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 540. Most crash reports don't capture drowsy, drunk, drugged, and distracted driving. And that incomplete data could be hurting efforts to take a full, accurate snapshot of the problem of distracted driving. The incomplete data compromising the efforts to save lives at a time when the number of roadway fatalities are on the rise. Joining us this morning is Debbie Herdsman, the president and CEO of the Itasca-based National Safety Council. Debbie's also the former chairman of the National Transportation Board, where she served from 2009 to 2014. Debbie, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. Good to have you on this morning. Let's talk first about this report you guys put out, I believe at the end of last week, at the end of Distracted Driving Month. What is it that's not being captured in these reports?
You know, one of the things that we found is really nationwide that we're not capturing a lot of important data on crashes. We understand what happened, but we don't understand why it happened. And so they may be documenting the location of the crash, environment of what was going on, the types of vehicles that were involved, but not getting to the root cause of what actually caused the crash. And that really hampers our ability to take appropriate countermeasures or put the right incentives in place, whether it's laws or technology.
The underlying suggestion here is that a lot of people involved in these crashes may be distracted drivers, and that's not really fully known, right?
Right. So that's one of the big challenges for a law enforcement officer at the roadside. They're filling out a crash report. You may have individuals that are injured or even killed. So they may be transported to the hospital, or they can't talk to you, and they can't tell you what was going on. And so law enforcement, even if they do survive, they're not always likely to admit that they were doing something that they know they shouldn't have been doing. And so we don't have the ability always to understand what was going on at the roadside. It can take law enforcement officers weeks to subpoena cell phone records. And so those crash reports are very incomplete, and we know distraction is significantly underreported.
And we also know, too, that the number of people dying in car crashes is on the rise. What do the stats tell us, and what is the impact of distracted driving on those stats?
Yeah, so unfortunately, even though our cars are getting safer, we know we can walk away from crashes with airbags and seatbelt use. Fatality numbers here are going up really quickly, and so we've seen a 14% increase in the last 2 years. And in 2015, we saw distracted driving crashes rise almost 10%. And so we know that distracted driving is involved in this increase in fatalities, but we still think it's underreported. And when you ask anybody on the street why fatalities are going up, the first thing that most people answer is because of distraction.
And that's because, I mean, you and I both know this. When we're on the expressways here around Chicago, it seems like every other car around us, somebody's on a phone while they're driving or doing something that they shouldn't be doing behind the wheel.
Yeah, and you know what? Americans agree. They acknowledge that their phones are addictive. 82% of them have told us that, you know, they're using their phones. But unfortunately, about 50% of drivers believe it's safe to send a text either manually or by a voice-activated system while they're driving. And so even though people don't like it when other people are texting or talking on the phone, they haven't quite changed their behaviors themselves. And we're still seeing a lot of unsafe behavior on the roadway. And like you said, everybody sees it. We're just not changing our own behaviors.
Well, Debbie, let's talk about some of the solutions. First, to this reporting issue. The report you guys put together shows that a number of states don't even provide the necessary area on a report for the police to even check off distracted driving. Is that accurate?
That's right. And so we've seen that some states actually do report some of these issues, whether it's drugged driving. So even though 50% of the population of the U.S. is living in a state that's decriminalized either medicinal or recreational marijuana, many states don't even have a spot on their reporting form to record a positive drug test. 4 out of 8 states that decriminalized recreational marijuana don't even record whether or not there was a positive drug test. So just modifying the forms is an important thing. But we know that none of the states have a field on their crash report form to note advanced vehicle technologies. And while we're talking about automated vehicles and other things, there are really important issues here with respect to reporting, whether a car's on autopilot or it's using a blind spot monitor or adaptive cruise control. We want to know about that, and particularly if it contributes to the crash. And so those can be early warning signs with technology for us.
And speaking of technology, is it something that vehicles, in your experience, too, at the National Transportation Safety Board, do we have to perhaps have black boxes in our vehicles to help us determine these things?
So we do have EDRs, or event data recorders, that are black boxes in our cars. But again, I would say the challenge is for these crash reports, law enforcement is not always able to download these devices at the roadside and immediately determine what's going on. But absolutely, when it comes to advanced technologies, particularly when we're talking about the car doing more of the driving than the driver, we absolutely have to know who was in control. And so if we're ceding some of that authority over to the vehicle, certainly we've seen high-profile cases like Tesla with autopilot. We've got to know who's actually at the wheel and who's operating at the time. So those are going to be really important issues for us to answer going forward.
Well, another part of this is the human component. How big of a deal is education to this? I remember when I was in a school as a youngster, we had this thing came to our school. The state police brought us for drunk driving, where we sat in this thing and it sort of gave us, it was sort of like a, I don't know how you would describe it, but it showed us how much time elapses from the moment you lose control of your car to the moment of the crash, and you can go like a football field, is what this sort of thing showed us. Is that the way to do it? Is it just educating people, or is that even not working?
Well, I would say when it comes to things like texting and driving, we're having real challenges because 46 states actually don't allow people to text, and education campaigns on this have been very clear, and people have been exposed to them, so they know they shouldn't text and drive. But what we find is that people are still doing it. They're doing it for a lot of different reasons. One, they think they can do it safely. Some, 45%, say they feel pressure to check their emails from employers while they're driving. But we found that family and friends are actually the worst distractions as people are checking, saying, are you almost here? You know, when are you going to arrive? We all need to change our behaviors, not just the people who are behind the wheel, but if you know someone's behind the wheel, don't call them, don't text them. You know, wait till they arrive to chat with them.
Yeah, and part of this mindset of safety, too, is this other new report out from the National Safety Council about workers in trucks and other people who are out on the road doing work, that their productivity is more important than safety. That mindset is unbelievable.
Yeah, so that's very scary. That what we found was when we surveyed employees, many of them said that they thought for their employers that their productivity took precedence over their safety. And so whether you're on a construction site or you're a road across the road truck driver, you don't want that message to be the one that goes through if you're an employer. And so making sure that our employees are safe. And when it comes to workplace fatalities, 40% of them involve motor vehicle crashes. And so it's really important to communicate to your employees, whether they're on the road for sales or they're driving as part of their job, that the phone calls and the texting can wait.
Debbie, lots to digest here, but certainly I guess we all have our work cut out for us. Thanks for being with us again here on the Opening Bell.
Steve, thank you so much. Have a safe day.
Thank you. You too. Debbie Herzman is the president and CEO of the Itasca-based National Safety Council, former chairman of the National Transportation Safety Board. You can find out more information about all of this at nsc.org.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow future is still flat as we head toward the opening bell off 14. S&P and NASDAQ futures are flat as well. Crude oil trading up and gold and silver are trading higher as well. Now for the latest on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. And as we take a look at those weekly crop bulletins yesterday, we are right on the five-year average for the number of acres planted in the U.S., the acres of corn. 34% of the corn acres planted as of Sunday night, and that's the same as the five-year average. But Illinois showing 63% of its corn acres planted, 45% in Indiana, and 28% in Iowa. On the soybean side, well, there we're looking at 10% of the soybeans planted. That's above the five-year average, 13% in Illinois, 10% in Indiana, and Iowa with 2% of its soybean acres planted. Quite a weather day in the grain market yesterday. Wheat futures up more than 5%, their highest level in nearly 2 months. After a weekend snowstorm in key production areas raised concerns about severe crop damage. Corn and soybean futures also rallied because of wet fields across the Midwest that they're concerned could slow down planting. But yesterday, the nearby corn contract down up 10.5. May soybeans up 14 cents a bushel, and May wheat up 22.5 cents a bushel. And then in livestock trade yesterday, live cattle contracts settled with modest gains. And they said profit-taking after futures hit new highs earlier in the session did put a cap on advances of nearby contracts. But the June cattle ended up 10 cents a pound at $124.12. That's what's going on in the ag world. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday. It's May 2nd, 2017. Federal Reserve policymakers opening a two-day meeting in Washington to discuss interest rates. The economy appears in many ways to be on solid ground, despite a 0.7 annual growth rate in the gross domestic product during the first 3 months of the year. The Fed has been moving toward a posture of gradually upping interest rates from the very low levels of recent years, but analysts say they're now doubting whether another rate will come out of this meeting today, perhaps at the next. Fed widely expected to keep its short-term interest rate unchanged after having raised it in March for the second time in 3 months. Most analysts foresee the Fed likely raising a rate again twice before the year's end, but that again depends on the data and the economy. Some other things happening today: automakers release vehicle sales data for April. It is a big day for earnings, including Aetna, Merck and Company, Altria, Pfizer, CVS Health, Freddie Mac, and then of course the granddaddy of them all, Apple, will report its quarterly financial results today. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017.